Gillette ProGlide, ProGlide Gel. Finally. Is it a pivoting flex ball designed to get virtually
Hello, hello.
Hello.
All right. We are coast to coast. We want to thank everybody again for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother. Again, this is...
Have you noticed how hard car dealers are to work with? That's why our slogan is We Make...
My apologies. Technical difficulties here. We're trying this thing, trying something new, trying it from a distance. Again, we want to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother, Dr. Keelan Henson and
Dr. Chapman, Nathaniel Chapman.
And we are here for all of your community, family, mental health needs, and everything else in between. So again, we tried to start back last week. We're getting back into the groove of things, but we said that we will not allow COVID to stop us. COVID won't stop the show. So, again, as we
can't
always
stop,
say,
won't stop.
Exactly. Any of the views that you hear, are not supported by any of the institutions or any places that we worked for, work with, or contracted by. These are the sole perspectives, ideas, suggestions of myself as well as Dr. Chapman. And as Dr. Chapman always likes to remind us,
this is not therapy. We do hope that you get something out of it, and maybe it'll help you make that trip if you need to. But this isn't therapy, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly. So again, as we always say, peace and blessings to everyone who may be listening to this live or who may listen to this a little bit later recorded. But today we thought we would talk about, as you see in the title, the transitions of life. How do we deal with transitions? Not just transitioning in life, but how do we deal with, what are some of the main components and things that we can deal with to help us deal with transitions in life, as well as curveballs that life may take, that throw our way? So, what are some of the things that come with unexpected mishaps, like COVID, like a death in the family, like a change in job, like a move, like a change in scenery? Like, what are some of the things that come along with that? Some of the stressors that come along with that? How we deal with those stressors? And what are some things you can do to keep you healthy? Okay. We thank you, Light Seeker. Peace and blessings to you for joining us. Hope you are well also. Okay. So what do you think, Dr. Chapman? We're talking about transitions in life. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, that's a hot subject for me because I'm currently going through a transition, and I think it's a good topic to explore as we think about what's going on in general, not just with COVID. You know, right now, this is you just watch TV, you see all the commercials coming, and they done got their game right, and they got commercials for COVID and not COVID, whether you're going to be in class or online. But transitions are a part of life, and I think this is just the season where you see a lot of it, whether it's students getting ready for school at whatever level, elementary, high school, college. But for some people, that transition is the parents, for example, feel like they might be losing their kids. Now they've got the kids that they've been with for, you know, this long period of time. Now they're going off to do other things, or like you said, these other things that are happening in life that might be due to COVID or due to other reasons. People, you know, dying, losing jobs, all those things.
I think that's interesting you brought up transitioning and children. I saw a lot of people were dropping they're dropping their kids off. You know, no matter, I don't know how long or how short that stay will be, but they're dropping their kids off at school for the fall. And what I find interesting is that in a lot of families, that a part of the reason that the transition is so hard is because you've been so-and-so's mom and so-and-so's dad so long that I think it's easy for parents to forget who they are.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what happens a lot of times in relationships, with relationships. It happens on an individual level, and it definitely happens, I think, in relationships, that so much and so often parents, I don't mean to talk about it as if it's a good or bad thing, but it's something that happens, that you wrap your entire lives up in your kids, that once they're gone, you know, you forget who you are.
Yeah.
We see that with parents. It's something that I talk about when I teach my relationship, when I used to teach this relationship class. And Eric Erickson talked about this notion of identity, of how women find, you know, Erickson was a disciple of Freud, and he thought that in different spaces and places in our lives, our focus is different. You develop an identity, then you look for romance, then you start to work. Okay. Well, he said that for women, identity and relationships go hand in hand. And a part of what we talked about was this notion of idea of how for women, you get a partner and you become, let's say his name is Joe, you're Joe's girlfriend. And then one day you and Joe get married, and then you become Joe's wife. You and Joe have kids, and you become Sally and little Joe's mom. So it's like, what happened to you? That your identity gets wrapped up in your family. It gets wrapped up in your husband. It gets wrapped up in your kids, that you lose yourself. And when you drop your kids off to school, you've been little Joe and little Sarah's mom for so long and so often. That's a part of the reason why the transition for a lot of parents, I believe it's a part of the reason why the transition for a lot of parents is so hard. Is because you've been Joe, like you haven't been you for so long that your life for the last 18 years has been intertwined with somebody else's identity. You've been defined by your roles as Joe's mom and Sarah's mom, that now that they're gone and out of the picture, it's kind of like, well, who am I? And people have to refine themselves all over again.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
No, I think, yeah, I mean, I think that's part of the struggle that parents face, or people going through that type of transition. When you're talking about Eric Erickson and those, you know, those eight stages, I also think that there's a book that I think I mentioned to you, The Female Brain by Luann Brizendine. And she, one of her hypotheses in that book is about how relationships just are different for males and females. And one of the things is that it's a big focus from early on. If you look at how little boys play as opposed to how girls play, it's more about the relationship with girls than it is with boys, and it's about competition. And so if the defining thing is relationship, then it would make sense. And obviously when the kid goes off, that doesn't mean the relationship's ending, but that's been a big thing. But I think the other thing that happens, it doesn't have to just be this as a mom thing, but for parents in general, is that, like you said, they get their identity wrapped up, and we're not saying that's right or wrong, but I think the other thing is some couples, maybe not all couples, they now are stuck with each other. I don't mean that in a bad way, but you know, they were used to taking care of the kids or whoever it was, and for some, that created some distractions, and not that it has to be that they're not really getting along, but they haven't really maybe made time for each other. You know,
That's a really good point. It's so easy to excuse not to have an excuse. We have an excuse now, but we got kids that we don't have to attend to. I'm sorry, I mean, cut you off. I just wanted to. That's a really good point.
Yeah, we don't have to attend to each other, and then basically you forget each other. You know, you lose each other, and then it's like now you're in the house with this stranger, and the level of that stranger is worse for some than others. But what do we do now? One, you know, there's a hole because the kid's not there, but also there's this other person I don't know that well next to me.
Yeah, and that's interesting because we all change, we all grow and change and evolve over time. And I think what's interesting is, again, talking about transitions. You know, as we've said this on multiple shows in the past, I'm not the same person at 40 that I was at 30. And I wasn't the same person at 30 that I was at 25. And I wonder what's interesting is as the kids leave and we're here and we're put in a position that we have to attend to each other to some extent, do I expect for you to be the same person that you was when I met you?
Yeah.
And what a disappointment and letdown that is. That, and maybe that's where that I don't know who you are feeling comes from, is that I have the expectations that you are and should be the same person that you was when I first met you. And you're not. Who are you? As opposed to leaving space and understanding and actually being excited about the fact that our lives are transitioning. We don't have kids now. Things are changing. And being excited about relearning, getting to know each other all over again. You're not, you know what I mean? Like, you're not starting from scratch. You have connections with the person and deep connections. We live together. We have children together. We've raised children together.
Well, just because you live together don't mean you got deep connections. But
yeah, I mean, no, I'm saying, no, well, I mean, okay. So, I mean, you're connected in some way. I never said it was deep. I never said it was a good connection or an intimate connection. I'm saying you can start from a place with someone that you are connected with. We're connected. We live on basic, like we live together. We've raised kids together. I think that that's a good place for a lot of couples to start to get to know each other all over again. But a lot of it is perspective. And when I think about transitions, and that's something that we'll get to a little bit later, is that I think that perspective is everything. Your perspective on life, on love, on relationships, on spirituality. I think that that will be the foundation and will drive how you handle any transition in life. But I think for couples, I think the perspective that you walk into that situation, it is important. You know, you can come from this positive space and place. We are connected. Again, like you said, for good or for bad, it's all a matter of perspective. You can come in and say, I don't know you. We ain't talked. We ain't had sex in years. Or you can come in and say,
yeah,
we have our house back.
Yeah, I hear that. I think that perspective is important. I just don't think that, because I think sometimes people get on the mindset that if you just hold a positive perspective, that's the answer. And I think even if it doesn't have to be couples, because, you know, maybe later we'll get into some different transitions that we've experienced that haven't been that same situation. I mean, I've been through a number of different transitions. And I think that there are just some hard parts to it. Perspective is important. I think it's also important to realize that these transitions can be hard and you're going to have your moments. And maybe more than perspective, it's let me sit down and reflect on what is actually happening with me right now. This is what's going on. You know, I read or heard somewhere once, like retirement, believe it or not, you know, you think about retirement as being a happy time for a number of people. It's not a happy time. Actually, there's a number of places where, or I think I've seen some numbers on some actual suicide rates increase as people retire. Because it's like, you know, I've been doing this particular job all my life, and now what's left for me?
Yeah. Who am I?
Yeah. I think sometimes people don't really get the time to really process the tough part of it, you know, because they got to say, no, you know, people ask you, how you doing? Oh, I'm good. You know, like, well, yeah, I'm good, but, you know, hey, it's a little tougher than I thought it was going to be. And so I'm not disagreeing with the perspective part. I think I've come in contact with too many people that want to just positive it over, like, hey, you know, rainbow and sunshine. In reality, some parts are hard, and that's okay. There just has to be space and time for you to talk about it. Either, you know, if you're going through it by yourself with friends, but if you're going through it as a couple with each other and be honest about, hey, you know, I don't know you like I don't like I used to. And, you know, that's just going to take some time to get to know you again, all this stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that is so, so very important that I think that there are realities to life that feeling good, like speaking positive, won't fix. Right. I remember my favorite comedian, Dave Chappelle. He said he was talking about this book that he read. I forgot the name of it, The Secret. And he said in his book, he's talking about the secret to life is being positive. He's like, if I'm hungry, you know, I can't manifest a hamburger.
Right.
But I get what he was saying is that there's some situations in life that are just hard. You know, I heard somebody talk about therapy and depression. And they're just like, you know, if I live in poverty, there's just some parts to life that are just hard. And right. I don't care what psychotropic drugs you give me. I don't care what perspective you try to help me hold. At the end of the day, there's a red notice that they're coming cut off my lights and I'm hungry. So, So I agree with you. I think that's a very good point. This notion of idea of there are just some situations that are just hard. Yeah. I still think that as best as we can, always try to focus as best as we can, try to focus on, you know, deal with reality, but always try to take a positive approach. I think that, again, I am one that I believe that, and maybe this is more spiritual than anything else, that we manifest our reality. I think the energy you put into the world is the energy you get back, and the perspective that you hold shapes the way you see the world. It matters whether you see the glass as half empty or half full. To me, you are one of the very few people I know in the world that whenever we speak and I say something to you, you always have some positive to bring out of it. Like, you always see, the thing that I will say about you that I admire most is that you always see possibilities.
Thanks.
And that is something that is so, you may not see it as rare because it's you and it's the way you think about the world, but you don't realize how very special you are and how very special that perspective is. And that perspective makes you special. And that perspective is what I think has helped you overcome all over the years. You, whenever we speak, and I don't even think that you know that you're doing it, you always speak in possibilities, always. And I think that to get through transitions, to get through a hard marriage, to sort of make it through anything with a modicum of sanity is, to some degree, I think you have to try to stay positive and you have to see the possibilities, even when things aren't going your way. When you lost your job, if you lose your job, I lost my job, or is it, you know, the universe is now opening up so I can start that business I've always wanted to start?
Yeah, yeah, and I'm with you, man. I mean, I think that the energy you bring and pulling that mindset and how I see you work it is definitely something. I always say, you know, where your energy flows is where your mind goes, and at the end of the day, that's what you will produce. I think the secret, the only thing that's kind of incomplete about that, I mean, it's basic psychology, just like fancied up the book. But I think The thing that's missing, though, is you don't, in my mind, I do think, you know, there's some manifesting that happens, but I don't think it's in a magical, mythical way. I think this is what happens, okay? Basically, you say to yourself, okay, you know, I really would like to get, you know, a silver Honda Accord. You know, I think I can actually get a silver Honda Accord. Yeah, if I do this, I do that. Then what will happen is you'll start seeing all of the silver Honda Accords that are around you. And you're like, wow, I didn't know there were so many. Then you'll start seeing deals, and then you'll start making plans to make it happen. And that's how you make it happen, as opposed to, man, you know what? I don't think I'm a silver Honda material. I ain't got my money, ain't right. You know, every time I get money, I lose money. And then your energy just goes into nothing. You don't really go into making a plan. It is the persistence of the plan that creates action. And so with what you're saying about possibilities, I agree, because when you start to think about possibilities is when you start to put plans into action. I just think the way that it's been, it's kind of advertised sometimes is in the secret way, and it's misunderstood, because really it's thoughts that lead to actions, and those consistent actions eventually lead to a result. And it's the same way that anxiety works in my mind. You get worried about something, you continue to be worried about it, and then you get the consequences of worry. You know, you're having difficulty breathing, you're tense. That where your mind goes, your energy flows. Now, again, I'm not saying that's the only reason for anxiety, but that's just an example.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, but the last part about that is there. But the danger is that people do think, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if you had the conversation with people, but look, say you had a stressful day, man. Something went wrong, or like, okay, so the other day, you know, I hit Bambi the other day, or Bambi jumped in front of my car. And so, you know, depending on who you tell the story to, someone might be like, oh, yeah, man, but you know, you should just go ahead and think about this. Now, to them, it could be petty that I'm like upset about my car, and other people, it won't be. But the reality is, it did hit my car. It did affect me in whatever.
Hello?
And or even worse is when it's happening to other people or happening to them, they just ignore it. And here's what happens. So I think when you just ignore it and try to just go straight to the positive without really acknowledging, I think what you're talking about, what works, because you say acknowledge what happened, then your body still acknowledges it. That's when you have repressed kind of depression or a sudden weight loss, you can't sleep right. It'll come out in some way. You know, it's like a jack in the box. You can push it down all you want, but it's still gonna pop out.
Yeah, I like that. I like that analogy. I like that. I wonder, again, for me, perspective is everything. And it's something that we talked about before. I wondered if so many people say why. We like, don't ask why. We always say, ask what and how. You can never fix why. Why will always feel hopeless. Why?
Yeah.
When you hit Bambi, when you hit a deer the other day, you didn't say, woe is me, why did this happen? Why did this happen? You went, man, you said, what and how? What just happened? How did it happen? What can I do to fix it? How can I fix this? And I wonder, when things happen to us that we may perceive is beyond our control, we always say, why me? Why me? And we don't realize we can't fix why, and you may never know why. But if we ask ourselves what and how, what just happened, and acknowledgement, like as you said before, it all starts with, you have to acknowledge what's happening to you. What just happened? How can I fix? What are the things that I can do to fix this? How can I fix this? And
again, if you can fix it.
Yeah, if you can, but it all starts with what and how, acknowledging what just happened and what are some steps that I can do to fix it. You know, how can I fix this? We can do some. I think what and how, to me, are action words. And why is not so much an action word. Why is geared towards trying to find meaning. And we may not be able to find or understand or know the meaning in all things that happen to us in life. But I think it's good to always start from a place of trying to do what you can. You know, again, do the things that you can do to fix situations, and try not to worry about the rest.
Well, okay, interesting thing. Two things. One, I think starting from a what and how, I like that. I would just tweak it a little bit. I think solutions are good when they're there. But sometimes it's the what, definitely, like what happened. And the how is just, how do I move from here? It's not necessarily like a solution. How do I move from here? Because someone dies that you were close to, how do I move from here? Not, you can't solution. There's no solution. You're not going to get back. Even if it's something that you did that was horrible, you know, you did, you know, in a moment of regret, at this point, all you can do is move. It might not be a solution because there might be some damage there that's been done. I think the other thing you were saying about meaning is interesting. So I was reading this book, I can't remember the name of it, but it's on trauma. And so, like, one of the big things about trauma is, according to this author, and he's a big researcher on trauma, is that the reason that people are so affected, one reason that they're so affected by trauma, is because when something happens, they are not able, something traumatic, they're not able to give meaning to it. If you don't successfully give meaning to something, it lives in your memory in almost a destructive way. And it'll stay there and be very vivid, and you'll have the same kind of vision over and over again, all the thoughts around it. If you can give it meaning, you can move past it. It would be like, you know, if you were a waiter or a waitress and somebody gave you a list of things that you need to remember, and once you complete the action, you bring the food out, you no longer have to remember that list. The trauma is never complete because it doesn't have meaning, so it stays in your head and causes destruction. So meaning can be important. It's just that sometimes people spend so much time trying to ask the question to get meaning that they're not going to be able to shape or find.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you might have to construct, maybe not about trauma, but construct meaning in a way that's going to be productive for you. If I go back to this whole deer situation, it happened at this point, and since it happened, you know, at this point in the day instead of this point in the day, that's better for me for this reason. And what does it mean? Well, it means nothing. It means Bambi was trying to get across the street to get some grass or some berries because she just was so addicted she had to run across the highway to get it. And that's that. But maybe not the best example, but the point is you give it some meaning, you could be done with it instead of holding on to it.
That's meaning. I've heard people say their philosophy in therapy is meaning doesn't matter. What matters is stopping the behavior. Who cares?
Oh, well.
From your perspective, and that's what I was going to ask you, from your perspective, how important is the meaning-making process? Or are there some things that it really doesn't matter? You're doing this. This is destructive. Let's stop the behavior. Or do you always believe that things will manifest? Like you said, I love that idea of jack in the box. Do you always feel that things will jack in the box on you at some point or another, or will manifest themselves in some way?
Okay, I think that's a good question because it's kind of complex. All right, like this, you know, the strict behaviorists will say like the meaning doesn't matter. That's something that Watson or somebody would say. I think it depends, but you have to remember that we are basically meaning-making people. So if we're meaning-making people, that means we're on a quest to make meaning most of the time. I don't think it's always constructive. You know how you have people that somebody said something that was kind of flipped to them, and they spend forever trying to think, what did they mean by that? They gave me the side eye. Did they mean this? And, you know, that's the rest of their day thinking about that. That's different. But I think making meaning about some things is helpful. And if you can't make meaning, depending on how much of impact it had on you, then you're just like you're static, you're frozen. And you might actually be frozen in your point of development, depending on when it happens to you.
Okay. So is your answer from your perspective, from your theoretical perspective, is it important to make meaning in all things to some degree? And depending upon how deeply you're impacted by it plays an important part in how deep that meaning has to be.
Okay, I would agree with the last part. It's hard for me to answer that first part. But the last part, the deeper the impact on you, the more important meaning is going to be to you and your ability to move on past the transition. Your ability to transition. Okay, so I think there's transition points in our life that if we make meaning, we move. We transform from this incident and move. It's not like you move past it because some things move with you, but we can move to a different state in life. Where others, if we can't make any meaning, it's like those movies that you've seen, like where sometimes they have somebody who's passed and they're stuck at the in-between.
Yeah.
They have some type of dilemma. In this case, the dilemma would be meaning. I'm stuck with meaning, so I can't move to my next level.
Okay.
So, like, example, with retirement, right? So if a person can say, oh, you know what? I've lived my life up to this point. Those years that I had, I found meaningful, and now I'm going to move on to my next. Instead of just staying with it and then just, like, that's the only thing. There's the meaning is not something that closes that book. Not that it has to close, but it doesn't serve a transition. So the story that they're telling themselves is what's making it hard for them to transition. And that's meaning.
Gotcha. Makes sense. How important do you think identity is in dealing with transitions? My perspective is, I think about James Marshall. James Marshall was a disciple of Eric Erickson. And he helped to sort of change the way that we thought about identity. He helped. James Marshall got M-A-R-C-I-A. James Marshall got us away from the notion or idea of this global identity. All these things happen to you as a kid, and either you turn out okay or you turn out kind of messed up. James Marshall was like, my identity when I bowl is very different than my identity in school. It's very different than my identity and how I feel about myself when it comes to religion or basketball and other things, that it's situationally specific. But James Marshall told us, the more you know about yourself, the more you know about who you are, the least likely you are to depend on something or someone outside of yourself to emotionally and mentally sustain you. And it's easier to cope with life. The less you know about yourself and who you are, fewer hobbies you have, the more likely you will be when life happens to you to need someone or something to help you through those transitions. So how important is identity? It's like, I think about it again. I think about relationships with everything. I think that when a relationship, as an example, between a man and a woman, when a relationship ends, everybody's sad, everybody's devastated. But I wonder if it's in a different way. She has been Joe's girlfriend. She has been Joe's wife. Typically, when someone needs to sacrifice in a family, it's usually mom, because she takes care of the kids. Mom usually sacrifices. Now, dad sacrifices to an extent, but a lot of times what we see is that men don't give up their complete identities in the same way that women do. Dad, a lot of times, continues to play golf. He might not play as often. He may not play as much as he wants to play, as often as he wants to play, but he continues. So when a relationship is over, there's still a lot of parts and pieces of who I am in that transition. There are a lot of parts and pieces of who I am that are still to some extent intact. They aren't completely given up. Men a lot of times don't completely give up their identities. So my question is, how important is identity, having a strong sense of self, having a strong identity, having hobbies, being rooted in who you are? Like, how important are those things when you got to move? When, you know, like when my father retired from the post office and didn't miss a beat because he kept playing golf. And he had his friends he played card with on every other Saturday. And he had an identity. He had hobbies. He had a sense of self. But most importantly, he was more than his job. and the things outside of his job defined him so much more than the thing that he did. He wasn't a postman that just so happened to play cards and play golf. He was a father and a husband and a jokester and a golf guy. And oh yeah, from this time to this time, I work at this place. How important is that perspective? How important is identity? How important is it to have a strong identity and a strong sense of self to get you through curveballs in life, to get you through tough times, to help you through transitions?
Well, I mean, you're the identity guy. I think that this is a challenge because identity is so broad. You know, I think that the trouble with it is that sometimes our identities are based on so many factors, and it may not always be equal portions of the pie. You know, one person may be, you know, part of their identity is that they're a Christian. The other part of their identity is that their particular job that they have or the sport that they do or whatever the case may be. And depending on how big that piece of the pie is and what they transition in will affect how they transition, whether they transition well or not, depending on if they're losing part of that pie. So if, you know, most of the pie was work and then you retire for work or have to leave work because of something happened to you, then you can see that there's an effect. But I think also, even when it comes to relationships, there's this book, it's called The Extraordinary Relationships. It talks about, it's from a Bowenian theory, which basically he talks a lot about family systems and the problems with people in general is stuff that happened in their early family dynamic. But particularly when it comes to, so not just with families, but any person who's in front of you. And he talks about this idea of identity in maybe a different way. So he uses this term called differentiation. And differentiation is the ability of an individual to be individual. So to separate from their family, have their own kind of sense of who they are and all these different things. I guess in some ways it's very Americanized that you be independent. You're not, it kind of clashes with some of the more other cultures. But the whole idea is that somebody who is well, has a good sense of who they are, can separate from other people and be okay, not have to be so enmeshed, as he would say, to other family members. And probably also that would go with other parts of their life. But I think it's difficult because identity is not always cut and dry. And depending on your cultural perspective, other people might be a large part of your culture. And if you have to transition away from other people, then that might be a big hit for you.
Yeah, I agree with you. I know you do a lot of stuff with athletes. And I've read a lot of stuff just with athletes, this deep depression that a lot of athletes go through. Just speaking to your point, I think was a good point. It truly depends on how the part of peace that you're losing or that's being compromised in some way. How large of a part of your identity is it? And that's right. What we see with athletes. You've been playing this game since you're five.
Yeah.
And now it's over. And who am I? And what do I do now? Because everything and all the parts and pieces of my life have been focused towards professional athletes getting this job. And what is it? The average guy stays in the NBA 4 or 5 years. The average NFL right. career is 2.5 years. My entire life has been directed towards playing a game to get a job that I will only on average hold for 2.5 years. And now I'm 23 years old and I'm a baby all over again.
Right.
I haven't developed or refined any of the other parts and pieces of who I am. And there's this deep, deep depression and anxiety that people go through, you know, in the sports world that I find interest. I find it sad and interesting and fascinating. Just, you know, just speaking to that point, this, like you said, how big of a part or piece of your identity is being lost.
I think, you know, that, I think that's what's helpful with that when possible. I mean, I was thinking about my own transition. So, you know, I've had a couple of different academic jobs and they have been transitions, but I was thinking about what holds me together in terms of identity. And I was looking at the piece of the pie and how it's separated. But the benefit for my transitions, minus minus the like the roughest transition I had. Maybe I'll talk about that in a second. But the ones that were academia, I didn't really lose the pie because I had to start over in some ways and rank and form and all that stuff. But I wasn't losing in part of who I was because I was still an educator. And that part I won't lose even if I retire. So I think one answer, if possible, is to put your so make your values or your building that you're going to put your ladder on something that can move. So it's not your building is not a job. It's on these values that you use to pick your job. So that if you don't have that job anymore, you still can use those values. That's different than just going to a job every day that you've been going to. And if that job lets you go because of COVID or something else, then you still can do this particular thing because those are your values. And, you know, as long as you don't lose some physical function, you'd probably be able to do that. I think my toughest transition was when I got out of the military. And
That was my next question to you. Go ahead.
Well, it was tough for a lot of reasons. One, because it came faster than I thought it was going to. Two, I had some expectations. I thought it was going to go easier than it went. It was hard for me to find a job when I got out. But I think that point was an identity point, like, you know, going from being a soldier to being a civilian is a transition. It's an identity transition. And I don't think that I was wrapped up in like the soldier, like I wasn't anything else. But having to figure out how to do life as a civilian, just like somebody who retires has to figure out how to do life as a retiree, or a parent who has kids in the house has to figure out how to do life without the kids in the house, or somebody who's married who has to figure out how to do life as a divorcee. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Identity, I think. So what is it that, and we're coming up on the hour, but what are some things that helped that we can tell people that can help them through transitions? What are some things that helped you through transitions in your life?
Okay, so for me, and I know the listeners don't really know exactly how many transitions I've had, but in the last 4 years, it's been about three or four. And these are from state to state. I think what's been helpful for me in transitions, first thing is support. You know, wherever it comes from, you know, you got family, but also you got friends that can be like family, and really tapping into them. One thing about just stressors in general is our ability to cope with stress to some degree is affected by our ability to tap into outside resources when we need to. Some of us are better at that than others, and there might be some reasons, like maybe you just didn't have people you can depend on or whatever the case may be. But I've been blessed to have, always at least a few people that I could lean on. And that's been growing as I've been transitioning to other places. So I would say one is support. I would say the other one is remembering, this is a difficult one, but remembering who you are. The reason it's difficult is because there are so many levels of you. Like, you're not just one person. Like, if I think about myself, you know, I'm a veteran, I'm a Black man, I'm a Michigander, I'm a educator. I could go on with a whole bunch of different labels that are just all may seem society based, but we're so complex and we have all these different levels. But you need to take some time to think about, remember, who are you? What's the fluid parts of yourself that are not going to go away because you transitioned to this other thing? It's really helpful if you have a supportive person who can remind you and tell you in those times where you might be foggy. Find it helpful to turn to faith if faith is something that's important for you, tapping into that and then the support you may have around that. And the other thing would be, I find helpful you might not even think it fits here, but exercise. It seems like a basic thing, but when you're transitioning, all of your stress hormones are going to be up, cortisol, adrenaline. And if you don't want to pack on a couple extra pounds, then you don't want to do this because all those things in your body are going to be like, we are stressed out now. The stress, eating, sleeping, whatever it looks like for you, or of course it could be the opposite where you lose weight. But I'm guaranteeing that you're going to have the physiological effects that are going to be affecting your body when you're stressed about this move. It doesn't even matter if the transition is a quote unquote good move or a bad move. I read some research once that said a move is stressful.
regardless of why you're moving. And even a job promotion is stressful. People don't think about that because they think about, well, only the things that are quote unquote bad are stressful. But any type of change brings on some stress. So that's what I would say.
Okay. I think for me, and this is just me personally, I think things started to change for me, and I started to make it through quote unquote curveballs and transitions and really, really rough transitions in my life. As I said before, one, when it took a shift in consciousness and a shift in focus for me. And what's interesting is it doesn't matter. For me, it doesn't matter. If it helps me, if it fills my cup and it gives me meaning and purpose and it helps me look at life in a different way and live life in a healthier way, it doesn't matter if it's real. I don't believe that it doesn't matter in real. It doesn't matter if it's real, and it doesn't matter if it's kind of like religion. If somebody asked me once how I felt about religion, and I said, if whatever you do stops you from wanting to climb in my window with a hoodie on, it's a good thing. And what I mean by that is, I don't, and this is just my personal opinion, I don't think it matters. To some extent, I don't know if I care so much about what people's specific belief systems are. The question is, does it fulfill you? Does it make you want to be a better person? Does it make you want to be good to people around you? Now, I'm saying all that to say, my perspective on people, my perspective on life, and the meaning that I give to life is what helps me through transitions. I am one that I believe that I believe that we are all special. And I think that God and the universe is always working in my favor, even in the bad things. Even when and it's something that I tell my kids all the time, either something happens that you want to happen, or something happens that you should try to learn something from to become better and stronger. There are no bad experiences. But again, that's just my perspective. That helps me through life. That has helped me tremendously through transitions. So no matter what's happening in my life, either something happens, I look at it as either something's happening that I want to happen, or something is happening that I should learn something from to make me better spiritually, mentally, and emotionally later. Okay. Now, again, as ridiculous and unrealistic as they may sound for some, for me, that is what has helped me through a lot of tough times. And because of that, I have always chosen to try to grow and evolve and become a better person, even from the bad things, even from bad breakups. I tried to take the perspective that I've learned to love in a different way. I now know that I can love in that way, or whatever the case may be. Okay. That's a perspective that has protected my mental health. It has helped me grow from an identity perspective. It has helped me grow from a spiritual and emotional perspective. Again, there are instances that, again, no matter how positive you try to be, if you're hungry, you're hungry. I can't go to the light bill and say, and try to be positive. They're going to say, we need our money, or we're going to shut your lights off. So I acknowledge the fact that there are very real boundaries and parameters to life. I'm not saying that I think that I'm not, and I don't think that anybody else should be unrealistic about life, that there are boundaries and parameters. But again, once I incorporated a shift in my perspective in the way I viewed life, the way I viewed people, and the way I viewed meaning and purpose, my perspective is everything that is happening, the universe is always working in my favor in some way, shape, form, or fashion.
Yeah.
And maybe hitting a deer and leaving a day late helped you avoid an accident that would have happened the day before. Who knows? We don't know. But again, I'm just always trying to look for something positive out of each situation as best as I can.
Yeah, man, I think that's, you know, that's meaning making at its best. And I think that it's definitely useful and will be useful as people go forward. I think that if a person is able to look at their situations and say, okay, this whatever story they tell themselves, the question is the story useful? If the story is useful, that's all that really matters. You know, if the story is useful and keeps you moving forward, then that's all that matters. And when it comes to, you know, wins and losses, I mean, I am of the belief that you got to lose to win. It may not all time. Sometimes I don't know that many champions who haven't lost, though. I mean, if you think you look at LeBron's story, or you go back, you look at MJ. Even MJ will tell you, man, if he didn't go through Detroit, you know, and
yeah,
those bad boys wasn't beating him up, he wouldn't be the way he was. And that's because they build character and different things, and there's different stories that you go through. I don't think it makes the losses any easier, though. You know, you still have the ability to take your bruises, and, you know, like Jordan getting pushed down by Rodman or Bill Laimbeer or whoever, get up and say, that hurt, but okay, I'm going to have to go to the gym next time or whatever it is. You can still acknowledge it, but it is true that the people that are able to make meaning can move on. Rather they move on and do something great or just move on, they can transition. Otherwise, you're going to be stagnant. You won't transition and you'll be stuck. So I think that's important.
Let me ask you this real quick, and I don't know if you can. I don't know if you can answer this. As a therapist, if someone has a belief system that helps them, but it's unrealistic, do you, if it fills their cup, do you kick it over? If it helped them, but it's unrealistic, and it's not like, do you deal with that? Do you mess with that? Or do you just let it be?
I mean, I think that depends. But my general answer on that is, I mean, it depends on a number of things. Because what I'm thinking in my head is like, does this person have mania? Is it just something, you know, like what's their mindset in general? But my general rule for people, whether they're in front of me as a client or in general, person comes to me and tells me, you know, hey, I want to be a billionaire. I'm like, hey, go get your billion. You know, like, it's not my job to determine if that's realistic or not. My question, I guess, as a therapist would be, is it hurting him? Is it hurting other people? If it's not hurting him or not, or her, and not hurting other people, then I'm not a dream crusher. I'm not in that business. I'm just, you know, I'm more of like, listen to you, ask you, you know, kind of explore what this is doing for you. Not from a standpoint of, like, here's what I think it's doing, but asking you and seeing where it's at. And then if you decide that it's working for you, even though I don't think it's working for you, that's not my decision. It's your life. I'm there to support you in your goal, you know, unless, like I said, you came and you got mania and something like that's a little different. But, yeah.
Good deal. Good deal. We are up on the hour. Other thoughts before we get out of here, just on just transitioning in general. How are you handling your transition, your current transition?
Yeah, it's bittersweet, man. I think that the more transitions you go through in life, the more of a process it becomes. For me, particularly, I'm talking about like moving, relocating, starting over again to some degree. It's something for me that I know is necessary, but it doesn't make it any easier because it's all, you know, you got to rebuild. Rebuilding when you're younger is fun and exciting. Rebuilding when you're older, it's not that it's not fun and exciting, but it's just different. And so.
Excitement, anxiety, or both?
I mean, I don't really have right now anxiety. I got excitement. But I'm not really like a big anxious person. But I'm just thinking about, actually, since I've been going through it, I've been basically just having to be in the moment. I haven't really got to do any deep thinking about it overall. So there's excitement, but also a realization that there's a lot to still be done, a lot of building that has to start over.
Gotcha. Well, we thank those who joined us, Lightseeker 5. Peace and blessings to you. We thank you for staying in the room and listening to us. For those who may be listening, who've popped in and out of the room, or who may listen to this later, we want to thank you for listening. Again, Brother to Brother will, while we're transitioning, we will try to continue to, we'll try to start back posting content, going live and having content weekly as best as we can. Okay. Maybe for an hour, maybe a couple of hours, maybe 30 minutes, but we'll try to get back in the habit of consistently and routinely putting something out for you to listen to. So again, as we always say, closing out again, this is Dr. Keelan Hinton. I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you all for supporting. As we always say, as I always say, rather, life is full of, you know, graveyards are full of regret and potential. You know, at the end of the day, make sure you are loving the people that you love and you're chasing your dreams and doing the things that make you feel fulfilled. And Dr. Chapman will take us out. And again, thank you.
So I'm going to tell y'all something that my father told me. He told me this when I was going through that transition to get out of the military, which was rough for me because I expected it to be a lot easier than it was. At the time, I was hustling, man. I was like doing a limo driving job. I just started this mortgage broker job. And if you do a job like that, it's a job where you don't make money until, you know, you start making sales. And then I did Mickey D's. It wasn't a good move for me or a good look. I only lasted one day. But what he told me at that time, which didn't make much sense to me at the time, that's what Pops is good for, right? Said, you know, you should stop and smell the roses. I got to tell y'all, the roses did not smell good that day. but it's a content and process thing. I think we spend a lot of our life just thinking at what's the content. We don't take a moment to look at the process. And transition gives you an opportunity to do that, to look at the process. And if you can make meaning out of the process, you can transition well. So take some time to process, make meaning out of the process. And I'm wishing the rest of you happy transition as we get ready for the next chapters of you all's lives.
All right. Thanks again, everybody, and peace and blessings.